My guest is writer Susan Cheever. She never planned to follow in the footsteps of her father, writer John Cheever, but she stumbled into a journalism career, which she eventually gave up to write novels. When her father died of cancer, she stopped work on her fourth novel to write a biographical memoir about him titled Home Before Dark. Cancer and hospitals are at the center of her new novel, Doctors and Women. It's about a married woman who falls in love with the oncologist treating her mother. Susan Cheever told me that this novel came out of witnessing her father's final illness.
Doctors and Women, like Home Before Dark, was a book that came out of the experience of having my father be sick and spend a lot of time in hospitals and be treated for cancer and, you know, finally die. And what happened to me was I had always been terrified of cancer and disease and hospitals and doctors, and I had always thought that those things wouldn't happen to me, that they wouldn't be part of my life. And when all of a sudden my father was diagnosed as having terminal cancer, my terror kind of flipped into obsession, and I started reading everything I could about cancer and finding out everything I could about cancer and hanging out in the hospitals, of course, with him. It made such a difference to me to really understand the disease, the hospitals, the doctors, how the whole thing works, that I wanted to spell that out in a book. I mean, I wanted to communicate that to whoever wanted to read about it. I wish I had had this book, you know, 5 years ago when my father got sick, because it would have saved me a lot of the agony that I went through because of my own ignorance.
Well, Susan, I think I can understand the fear that you had of hospitals and of being in hospitals. And I'd like to read a passage from your novel, Doctors and Women, in which you describe being in a hospital. And you write, "In the hospital, the world closes down into a narrow, vivid focus. Only the hospital seems real. Life is stripped down to its essentials, like travel in a mountainous, dangerous country. The real world is a small, dark room where people come in and out to prod and poke and ask the same questions over and over. Beige walls, beds on wheels, fluorescent lights, meals on trays, chipped paint, the smell of antiseptic, and in the distance, the sound of someone screaming." For me, it was that last part, the sound of someone screaming, that really got to me, because that's always happening whenever I'm in a hospital, either as a patient or as a visitor, and I find it terrifying.
You know, I've spent a lot of time in hospitals, both with my father, and also I have a daughter she's fine, but has had some bouts with illness. And I lived, I guess, last year for about a week in the pediatrics ward at Mount Sinai because my daughter had pneumonia. And it's interesting how you deal with that. You either back off and, you know, go into an even smaller world so that you don't hear the screaming, or you start to get involved in it. And what I did was, of course, I got very involved in the pediatrics ward, and I ended up taking care of some babies because they're just, you know, in a lot of these hospitals, and Mount Sinai is certainly not an inner city hospital, there just really isn't enough help.
There's an interesting detail when the main character goes into the office of the doctor that's treating her mother. She finds that there's all kinds of interesting objects,
right,
in the office, sculptures and rare items, this and that. And she asks where they're from, and he says that they're all gifts from patients. And I wonder how you found out about that, if that's typical, that surgeons end up getting a lot of gifts from their patients.
Oh, it's completely typical, and it's not just surgeons. But I think this, the patient becomes a child and also a suppliant in the hospital. In other words, you're always asking, you're always pleading, you're always hoping. It really, I don't want to say reduces, but it really brings out a very odd aspect of most people's character. And you particularly see this in New York, where a great many people are outside the hospital, tremendously powerful and responsible. Inside the hospital, they become very different. And one of the few ways that you can exercise your outside power inside is to give expensive presents.
There are two daughters in your novel who play a caretaking role in the lives of their mothers who both have cancer. Did that happen to you? Were you helping to take care of your father during his last years?
Oh, sure. We all helped. My brothers, my mother, and I. And the two or three people who'd been close to him all really pitched in. There's a tremendous amount of work to do when somebody's that sick. I certainly was very much there. I was pregnant when my father was dying. And in a way, it was very difficult, but in another way, it was very nice for me to be able to be taking care of him at such an important time in my own life.
You know, that's one of those ironies that one never knows how to handle.
Right. It was hard, but I felt, you know, walking around the cancer ward, I felt really good about being 8 months pregnant. I felt that I was representing something to the people who I was talking to, particularly to my father, but really to the other people that I got to know on those floors, that I was representing something nice.
You had to spend a lot of time in the hospital because of your father's terminal illness, mm-hmm. and also because your baby was sick a couple of times. But then your novel kept you in the hospital when you didn't have to be in the hospital.
Right.
You were in your office thinking about the hospital and describing that. Did that get to be an emotional burden?
Well, it was part of this process, you know, that I described before of coming to understand the hospital. My way of dealing with things that terrify me is to find out about them and understand them, and then they're not so terrifying. It's not everyone's way, but it's my way. And you know, a lot of people ask me if it wasn't depressing hanging out in the hospital, and it wasn't at all, because people under those kinds of pressures really behave. I mean, the joke is that, you know, when you're going to die, you really mind your manners, but it's deeper than that. I saw people at their absolute best. And, you know, I would go over to the hospital on the bus, and on the bus people are kicking each other in the shins and yelling at each other, and the bus driver's screaming at some woman with kids because she takes too long to get on the bus. You get into the hospital, people are very aware of how much is at stake, and their best selves emerge. They're people who are really thinking about their families, their interactions with other people, what they're going to do with the rest of their lives, if there is a rest of their lives. They're people really in the process of evaluating, of stepping back, and doing the kinds of evaluations of their lives that we all should be doing.
I know that while your father was alive, you didn't like to let him see your writing until it was basically in galleys. Was that so he wouldn't be able to change it or criticize you for it?
Well, I think it was two reasons. It was because I was afraid that he would say something that would stop me. In other words, yes, to answer your question, yes. But I think it was also to spare him the weight of having, of being in the tremendously uncomfortable position of having to say that he liked it or didn't like it under the circumstances. In other words, my father was a tremendously honest, direct, painfully direct man, and we didn't share the same tastes in writers. We liked many different things and had very different interests, and I could see that for me it could be excruciating, and for him it could be excruciating.
Would it have crippled you if he told you that this isn't any good?
Well, no. One factor here is that I didn't start writing fiction until I was 35, so I was, by that time, I don't think anything could have crippled me, you know. But I certainly wouldn't have been happy, or maybe I would have liked it better. Hard to tell. You know, hard to tell, but it certainly wouldn't have helped my friendship with him.
You were the child of a novelist, and now you're the parent.
That's
novelist,
right.
Of of a child. Are there any things you do or don't want to do as a parent novelist?
There's some very, very obvious things. My father used me in fiction quite a bit, and in one particular story, the little girl is killed in a ski tow accident, and when I came on that story when I was, say, 12 years old, I was very upset. And I, you know, being my father's daughter was in many ways wonderful. I mean, I've never been anyone else's daughter. I mean, I think Home Before Dark is a testimony to my love for him and my gratitude for what he gave me. But I wasn't thrilled as a child to be exposed in that way. And I think I would not do that to my child. I think I'd be a little more careful. I'm older. I'm older than my father was. And I think that makes a big difference, too.
Susan Cheever, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks, Terry.
Susan Cheever's new novel is called Doctors and Women.